Although the primary season is in full swing and the candidates are raising and spending money at record rates, the Federal Election Commission, which polices political spending, has shut down because of a political standoff over nominees for new FEC commissioners. How will this affect the campaigns? Well, with me now for today's Second Underreported are Paul S. Ryan, FEC Program Director of the Campaign Legal Center, a nonpartisan nonprofit organization, and Gerald Hebert, Executive Director of the CLC and law professor at Georgetown. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you.
So what is the Federal Election Commission's official function when it's working the way it's supposed to?
When it's working the way it's supposed to, this is Jerry Hebert, Leonard. When it's working the way it's supposed to, it's comprised of six commissioners. Three are appointed Democrats and three are appointed Republicans. And it takes four votes for the commission to take any formal official action. And so oftentimes in the past, the commission has deadlocked on matters of controversy or where it is perceived that some campaign finance rule or regulation is going to impact one party rather than the other. So at best, it functions as relatively weak, but it is better to have a weak functioning flawed FEC than it is to have none at all.
Sir. Because with two commissioners, you can't get four votes.
That's correct. You can't get four votes. But I should add, as your question, I think, intimates, that even with six commissioners, it's often hard to get four votes on any matter that is controversial or significant.
Well, Paul, why is that? Aren't we all, as Americans, interested in having fair elections, whether we're Democrats or Republicans?
I definitely think that Americans are interested in having fair elections. And I wouldn't go so far as to say that the federal election commissioners themselves are not interested in having fair elections, but the simple fact is that issues often arise before the commission that will impact one party's activities more so than the others. And that's when it becomes difficult to get the four votes necessary to take official action. But I also want to comment on the way you characterized the situation during your lead-in, which was that the FEC has shut down. I think it's important for the public to realize that the agency itself has not shut down. It is, in fact, true that there are no four-commission majority in order to take many official actions, but that doesn't mean that the commission itself doesn't continue to operate. The staff of the commission, it's an agency of well over 100 employees, and in fact, I just came about an hour and a half ago from an argument in federal district court where the Federal Election Commission's attorneys were representing the agency defending a federal campaign finance law. So there's still a lot of work going on over at the agency. There are some things that can't get done without the commission fully constituted, but again, the agency itself hasn't shut down per se.
Do they offer advice instead of issuing binding decisions?
Well, that's something that the commissioners, the two-seated commissioners, have decided to do, and I've read some news reports to that effect this week. They will be holding a meeting later this month, and the two-seated commissioners will be offering what will amount to informal advice, but to the extent that both of those commissioners, one from each party, agree on what the outcome of a particular advisory request would likely be, for example, then I think the regulated community can take some guidance from that.
And what about the campaigns? Are they free to take or leave the advice?
Well, they're always free to take or leave that advice, even when the commission is fully constituted. And that's simply the way the advisory opinion process works. You can ask the commission for its opinion, and the commission will give you an opinion. If they tell you you can do what you've asked to do by a majority of four votes, then you as a requester or a formal advice are shielded from any prosecution down the road if you, in fact, do what you propose doing and the commission told you it was okay. By contrast, if they don't give you the answer that you want, you can still go ahead and do what you wanted to do, and you run the risk of somewhere down the road perhaps being the subject of an enforcement action, but as a legal matter, again, you're fully free to take or ignore the commission's advice, even in the formal advisory opinion context.
So, Gerald, it sounds to me like it would have had little impact on the current election cycle anyway. Have we noticed the absence of the four commissioners so far?
Not really, no. That's not to say that as we get a few months down the road, if this impasse continues, we won't feel the effects. But just in the first few weeks of there only being two commissioners, there really hasn't been very much for the commission to really do.
Have any of the presidential candidates made statements about this or commented on it?
Not directly that I'm aware of. You know, most of the presidential candidates who wanted to receive public financing have already been certified in 2007, late 2007. So the commission, failure of the commission to have more than two commissioners right now out of six really hasn't affected that. And, of course, the distribution of the public monies, the public financing, that typically doesn't occur until the spring when the tax money rolls in from the federal tax returns for the 2007.
So it won't have any effect on John Edwards' campaign. He is participating in the public matching fund system, and the FEC disperses those funds.
That's correct. It's really whether they had two commissioners as they do now or whether they had a full complement of six, it wouldn't affect it as of today, that's for sure.
Now, could a candidate, I throw this out to both of you and pretty much all of these questions because you're both quite knowledgeable, could a candidate take advantage of this situation and engage in a little campaign spending hanky-panky?
I would say unequivocally no. I mean, the simple fact that the commission isn't fully constituted doesn't mean that the statutes that Congress passed are not on the books and in full effect. It does not mean that the regulations that the commission itself has promulgated to implement Congress's laws are not on the books and in full effect. And the simple fact is that in past election years, it's typical for the Federal Election Commission to take several years to conduct investigations and resolve any complaints of wrongdoing. So at most, I think, you know, I'm confident that the commission will be reconstituted in the coming weeks or months. So at most, I think you're looking at perhaps the delay of resolution of complaints about wrongdoing being extended from 3 years to 3 years in a couple weeks or 3 years in a month. And in my view, that isn't a very big deal. But again, the laws are still on the books. When the commission does get back to full force, it will presumably, and it will certainly have the obligation to look at all the activity that has occurred by candidates and independent political committees and party committees, et cetera, even during the commission's absence of a quorum. And, you know, so any wrongdoing that has occurred should be investigated and punished, you know, in due time. But again, that, you know, even under the best of circumstances, that's historically taken the commission several years to deal with.
A law with the rather awful name, Honest Leadership and Open Government Act, was signed this past September, and that sets some new federal ethics standards, doesn't it, about the disclosure of bundled contributions?
It does, and the commission has begun its rulemaking to implement it. There are actually two provisions of that new lobbying and ethics law that the FEC had the responsibility of implementing through a rulemaking. One of those rulemakings was concluded in mid-December, and that had to do with candidate use of private corporate aircraft to travel around the country. That rulemaking is done. The rule is in full effect. The second is the one you mentioned, having to do with lobbyist contributions bundled by lobbyists. That rulemaking, does, although the law itself is in effect, the reports that would be required to be filed by candidates regarding what money they've received bundled through lobbyists wouldn't have to be filed until next summer at the earliest. So even that provision, the fact that the FEC hasn't finished the rulemaking yet, won't really have any impact on how the law is implemented or enforced for a few months down the road.
I'm talking with Paul S. Ryan, FEC Program Director of the Campaign Legal Center, and Gerald Hebert, Executive Director of the CLC and a law professor at Georgetown, on today's Underreported. Gerald, there are some people who say that even a fully functioning FEC isn't particularly effective. George Will wrote that, I'm quoting, sensible citizens should rejoice about the current disarray of the FEC. Do you agree?
No, I don't agree with that.
Do you ever agree with George Will, or does anyone ever agree with George Will?
About the only time I've agreed with him is when he expresses his passion for the Chicago Cubs. But it's pretty limited to that alone, Leonard. You know, the FEC has not been a very effective agency, and in some respects it's really carried out what Congress really intended it to be, which is a toothless tiger. And the FEC itself does need some reform in terms of its composition and how it's selected so that it can become more effective. And I think that would be more in the best interest of the American people rather than the best interest of the politicians who created it.
Well, instead of appointing three Republicans and three Democrats, couldn't people be appointed who we know have a strong bipartisan sensibility? Is that possible?
It's certainly possible. I think you're pointing to something that is desperately needed, which is we need to change the way that we select the membership on the commission in order to ensure that it doesn't hit partisan gridlock each and every time an important matter comes before it.
Who nominates new commissioners?
Well, the president nominates all the commissioners, but typically the way it has worked is that three are recommended from leadership on the Democratic side and then three from the Republican side. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the current stalemate exists because there were commissioners nominated and the slots could have been filled. That's even true notwithstanding the fact that one of the nominees selected by the president was so controversial that some senators put a hold on his nomination.
We'll get to that in a moment. But what happened to the other four, Paul? Did their terms just expire?
Several of them, they were recess appointees. There were three. There's one seat. The commission has been down from six members to five members since last spring when former Commissioner Michael Toner, who was a Republican appointment to the commission, decided to leave the commission and go into private law practice, return to private law practice. So just to be clear about that, what we're really dealing with here in the most recent battle before the Senate is the confirmation of three recess appointees that had been appointed almost approximately 2 years ago by President Bush. And of those three, you know, and there are two other, the two seated commissioners are what we often refer to as holdover commissioners, Commissioner Mason and Commissioner Weintraub, who are seated and they're still occupying their seats. They were not recess appointees, but and consequently their terms did not expire on December 31st. They can remain in their seats until they're replaced.
Why was it necessary to make recess appointees in the first place? That usually suggests there's another problem.
You know, that raises another very good point, and if I had to speculate it, I might think that the recess appointees were made because perhaps President Bush thought that, you know, at least one of these nominees, former Commissioner Von Spakovsky, perhaps would not have been confirmed by the Senate. But your guess is as good as mine, I guess, as to why the president used the recess mechanism if it were not out of a fear or reserve that his nominees would not have been confirmed by the Senate 2 years ago.
So, Gerald, let's talk a bit about Hans Von Spakovsky, President Bush's FEC nominee. Why has he been so controversial?
Well, he's been controversial for a long time. Prior to his recess appointment on the Federal Election Commission, he was over at the Department of Justice in the Civil Rights Division, overseeing the voting rights section. And while in that position, he took a number of measures that went not only contrary to enforcing the Voting Rights Act, but actually used parts of the Voting Rights Act and the law enforcement machinery at the Justice Department for partisan gain. And so there's a long record of this now in front of the Senate. And when all of those details came to light, and I'll just give you one or two minor examples of this, you may recall the redistricting of congressional seats in Texas that led the legislators to flee there, the Democrats, to Oklahoma and New Mexico, led by Tom DeLay, the now disgraced former congressman. Well, that plan, which passed in Texas despite those legislators trying to block it, went to the Justice Department for approval, and approximately 10 career non-political lawyers and professional staff members recommended that the plan be blocked because it discriminated against Latino voters and African-American voters. And they were overruled secretly by Von Spakovsky, who approved the plan anyway. And so no one really knew this until a couple of years later when their memorandum recommendation leaked out of the Justice Department. And this was clearly done for partisan gain because the plan that DeLay drew was thought to knock off five or six Democrats, which it ultimately did. And so that's the kind of record that Von Spakovsky amassed. And when that became public and was assembled for the Senate, Many senators, quite frankly, on both sides of the aisle said, you know, this is really not somebody we want making decisions that are supposed to be even-handed about the way our campaign finance laws should be enforced.
Well, President Bush must have known that appointing him would cause trouble. So
well,
is this was he making a point, or was there some other factor involved?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I suppose the best person to answer that would be the president himself. But I can tell you that, you know, the president, since he's taken office in 2001 in January, hasn't really shown much of a desire to compromise when it comes to matters like this. And, of course, until the Democrats actually took control of the House and Senate, really had his own way. So until recently, he probably would have been able to get Von Spakovsky through. But that's no longer the case, and I think he didn't think that people would really stand up and fight for, you know, what they believe in, which is that somebody with a record of suppressing people's votes shouldn't be promoted to a position on a federal agency that's supposed to protect people's voting rights under our democracy.
Paul, what about the other three nominations? Has the stalemate over Von Spakovsky held them up as well?
It most certainly has, and my understanding is that there was a proposal from Senator Reid, is my understanding, to have separate votes, up-down votes, on all of these pending nominations to the commission, and that's something that apparently the president would not agree to and Senator McConnell would not agree to. So there was the possibility to just have a straightforward vote on all of the commissioners, which would have led to having a working majority, a working quorum of the commission seated today, but again, perhaps knowing that Mr. Von Spakovsky would not have been confirmed, that proposal itself was blocked by the president and by Senator McConnell.
Do either of you have an opinion about whether he should be confirmed? I'm getting the sense that you both think that he was a bad choice.
Well, he was probably about the worst person I think that could be found by the president for this nomination. So I've made that clear. I've written extensively about this, Leonard, and why this particular nominee is singularly unqualified to serve on the FEC. And the president really, I think, has an obligation to find someone who is at least, even with Republican credentials, and there are many people in this category, who don't suffer the same disabilities of record that Von Spakovsky brought with him and are fully qualified to serve on the FEC. And the president really, in an election year, I think, has an obligation to go ahead and do that. He can put a Republican on there. Obviously, that's his prerogative. And there are many people in Republican circles who are well qualified to serve on the FEC. And I think in an election year, the American people deserve it.
Paul, are you as adamant as Gerald?
Yeah, in a word.
Okay. Well, so what's happening now? The what was the FEC working on before it became, for the moment, ineffective? Weren't they mostly abuses during the 2004 electoral cycle?
Well, they're the abuses that we've heard about in terms of having enforcement actions resolved. The so-called 527 organizations that have been collectively fined several million dollars, mostly in the last 13 months by the agency. The agency began rolling out settlement agreements with these 527 groups back in December of 06, finding that the groups broke the law back in 04. They ended up paying a tiny fine by comparison to the amount they spent illegally back in 04. But, you know, again, it took more than 2 years for the FEC to resolve those complaints. We saw activity by 527 groups again in 2006, you know, doing pretty much the same thing that we saw groups doing back in 04. It'll be another year probably before the FEC deals with those complaints. And the Campaign Legal Center has been instrumental in filing complaints against these groups, both pro-Democratic and pro-Republican 527 groups, in 04 and again in 06. So we're waiting. Patiently might not be the right word, but I'll just leave it at we're waiting to see the FEC resolve all of those actions. And
as a huge backlog accumulates.
Yeah, and you know, a huge backlog is accumulating. Usually off election years, there's not a whole lot of complaints being filed at the agency, so there's probably not a whole lot of new enforcement actions stemming from 2007. But as we go into an election year. Now that we're in 2008, I'm sure there will be complaints filed. But again, I think what we're talking about in practical terms is a delay of several weeks or months added on to the typical 2 to 3 year time frame of getting these things resolved anyway. I don't see anything that's really critically timely that's not being done right now at the agency. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the FEC is still litigating, and you know its legal team is still doing what it does. They were in court this morning, and they'll continue to deal with lawsuits that are pending. They'll continue to do investigations of legal matters that are currently under review at the agency. They just don't have the 4 votes to make any of the final determinations on these actions.
Has anything like this ever happened before?
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah,
I don't know,
not
Jerry.
To mine either.
What do you think it'll take to resolve the standoff? Do you think the president might back off on this, or does it look like he's going to take the hard position?
Well, coming out of the White House so far have been statements that, as far as they're concerned, the president put up Von Spakovsky and the nomination remains pending. Of course, there's nothing that, as Paul mentioned a few minutes ago, there was a vacancy on the commission as a result of former Commissioner Toner, a Republican, having left early last year. So it seems to me, fairly easy for the president to pick a Republican who he has yet to name, nominate that person, and also pick one of the two Democrats who suffered not getting a vote on their nominations because of the block on Von Spakovsky. And you'd at least get those two commissioners through, one Democrat and one Republican. You'd have at least a four-member commission.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the more honorable thing would be either for the president to nominate a clean slate of people, which could include the people that were previously nominated, except for Von Spakovsky, and to pick Republicans so you'd have two Democrats and two Republicans up there, and you could then have your full complement of commissioners. And I guess the final point, Leonard, I'd make is that
quickly,
I would think that Von Spakovsky would rather than hold his colleagues hostage.
Yeah, he should resign. I want to thank you both so much, Paul S. Ryan and Gerald Hebert, for being participants in today's Underreported. We've run out of time. On tomorrow's show, Andrea Martin and Roger Bart from Young Frankenstein, Mel Brooks' new musical comedy. Also, Ian McShane, who plays a difficult father in Harold Pinter's The Homecoming. Padma Lakshmi on her new cookbook, Tangy, Tart, Hot, and Sweet. And Please Explain is all about the history of money. By the way, you can always weigh in on the conversation during the show by leaving a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English, Scott Goldberg, and Blakeney Schick. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Rory Bernstein, Leslie Dickstein, and Stephen Valentino. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.